Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. And welcome back to the studio, State Senator Jim DeBacchus on the left.
I'm so happy to be back.
Great to have you, Jim. We missed you, although your fill-ins did a great job. So keep an eye on your job. And on the political right, Representative Dan McKay. Welcome, Dan.
Good morning. It's good to have the triumvirate back together.
Yeah. And in politics, there are always moving pieces, and there's these little pieces moving. One of them continues to be what's going to happen in Sean Reyes's life with the potential to be in the Trump administration. Is that still alive, guys?
Still out there.
It's Federal Trade Commission?
Yeah, the Federal Trade Commission. And so
why is he a natural candidate for that?
Well, it's an oversight position, right? And mm-hmm. so for a lot of times they're watching over mergers and acquisitions. Sean's had, experience in that in mm-hmm. his private law days. And so having that from an oversight position, I think, will be very interesting.
It's Utah. I mean, I just don't think Donald Trump, why would he, doesn't he have all these sorts of political friends in other states that have similar backgrounds as our attorney general?
Yeah, I think probably. But if you look at the things that Sean Reyes brings to the table, I think he brings a lot of skill and finesse. And it's also a state, a red state, that he doesn't yet have representation from.
Interesting.
So I think he adds that up and says, let's bring in Reyes.
He said there's other things, Jim. Does that mean because he's Polynesian?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm torn. I mean, I really want him out of Utah.
Oh, goodness.
And but then again, he can do damage. You got to give the guy credit, though, for him and his campaign guys. Just the mere whisper that he was going to get the FTC, they have collected more than $100,000 from people with pending business before the Federal Trade Commission, which means as soon as the whiff went out, he started knocking on the doors and sending his people to pull the money in. It's right there on his report. This guy is not that far from the previous two attorney generals.
Oh,
I mean, I just think it's a snake that goes running off to collect money from the companies just before he starts to go regulate them. That it just shows bad form, and I've seen that a lot with Sean Reyes.
It's kind of like an art dealer that sells a really popular piece of art for a lot of money, right?
Jim, we should ask we should ask Dan this, because he's often mentioned as someone that would be a great attorney general in our state. But if Sean were to take a job, offered a job, how would we replace him? How does that work in our state?
I think the party picks the person,
what happens?
Right? The Central Committee of the Republican Party?
Yeah, the State Central Committee of the current Republican Party, because the current AG
is Republican.
Republican. If it was a Democrat, the State Central Committee for the Democrats, all eight of them, would get together, and they would choose,
three names,
and then the governor would then choose from those three names.
Yeah.
What if there's an ongoing investigation by the attorney general of the governor at the time? Well, okay, we're not
okay,
going there.
Okay, we won't go
all
there.
Right, all right, we're not
all
going
right,
there.
Do another moving piece. Representative Chaffetz.
I could vote. I would. Well, I'm not going to say it because I don't want to jinx anybody. I mean, my endorsement, I certainly would not endorse
Dan.
Dan, I would think he would be
just exponentially helped my chances.
Right. Exactly.
Representative Chaffetz, more whisperings coming out that he's going to have his own shot at a program on Fox. I think that's a great fit for him. He's a talented media showman.
Yeah.
And but it creates a little bit of a trick in our state for how he'd be replaced.
Yeah, and that is causing all the gossip behind the scenes. Who's running? Mm-hmm. What's the process and all this, finagling?
So break it down. Who's running?
Okay, so the runners on the Republican side, I haven't heard any Democrats that are thinking about running other than, and I can't remember the lady's, Jim, the lady that was thinking about running against him.
Yeah,
before.
She raised so much money.
She got 500 grand
in
the bank.
Yeah, she had a bunch of money.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. The first lady to lose in November. So, but right now you've got State Senator Deidre Henderson. You've got
fabulous pick.
Fabulous pick. State Senator Margaret Dayton, who out of Utah County, who is, I think, out there stirring the pot. You've also got State Representative Brad Daw, who is looking at this.
Like Brad?
You had Mayor John Curtis from Provo, who was also looking at it as well.
I'm told a former Democrat that turned Republican.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Hey, chameleons, they work everywhere, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are four of the big names of people. And then you've got Damian Kidd, who declared that he was going to run against Chaffetz as a Republican anyways, as an attorney down in Provo. So there's five names that are kind of sitting out there.
It shows that people in this state are still willing to serve and step up and be on the ballot.
Well, I like the way you put it. It just shows that people are still ambitious politically and they're still willing to step up and beat the Democrats when possible.
Hey, we had some other news this week that was both well, I'll just say sobering, and I apologize for the pun on words, but a local broadcaster, Shauna Lake, pulled over for a DUI, now been charged, as I understand it. That was a sad thing to see.
Look, people make mistakes. It just happens. You know, thank goodness nobody was injured, nobody was hurt. We shouldn't send a message that it's a good thing. There is, believe me, a very rigorous process that follows people who get a DUI. It's taken very seriously. But I'm not sure that the first time somebody makes even a serious mistake, they ought to be fired from their jobs and have a scarlet letter across their forehead. I hope
Unless
Channel 2 doesn't fire her.
You know, I got to say, Jim, it would be refreshing for Channel 2 to basically say, hey, you mean a lot to this community and a lot to this station. And, you know, you need to, you know, pay your dues for the problem, but you still have a job. I think that would be a wonderful way to end it, but I think it's unlikely. And Dan, I'm guessing by your face, you think the same.
Okay, so I have a friend of mine whose wife was in was an anchor on a local news station here, and she one time we were all out to dinner, and she explained to me how difficult it is to be a woman on the anchor desk because everybody wants to be on the anchor desk. One, two, not only do they want to be on the anchor desk, but they all want to be center stage at, you know, 9 and at 11, whenever the news are, right? Whenever old people watch the news.
They get the
TV.
Biggest contracts, make the most money.
Yeah, they do.
They got to be perfect.
And that's just it. You've got to be perfect. And so the problem is, as women age, it is more difficult for them to keep their jobs than it is for men to age. And so as women age, keeping that job becomes more difficult. And you've got these young upstarts, young ladies who want to be in that seat. So they're constantly trying to push them out. So there's a lot of pressure on being on that desk anyway. And then, and I heard one time, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, Dick Norris, was explaining. He said, you know, people, it's a position of trust to go into someone's living room every night. He explained that. He's like, and that's the way the news producers look at it is, this is a position of trust going into somebody's living room to tell them what they should care about and what news is important. So he said, and I think because of that position of trust position, I actually agree with him. I don't know how she keeps that position.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
It's a news reader. It's not a Mother Teresa, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
She's done a good job. She works hard. She's been part of the community. She made a stupid mistake. So lynch her, throw her out of a job, and let's put her in a leper colony.
Now, I'll say for myself, I agree with you. I think I'd like to see her stick around.
I know. I just think it would be a refreshing message that that this community is, you know, willing to give her a second chance.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Hey, we also had Mormons Building Bridges denied for the fourth time in a row in the Days of 47 parade.
How come this construction company can't get a place in the Days of 47 parade?
All right, that's a good one.
For the life of me, I can't understand why they can't.
Mormons,
get in.
Mormons Building Airports, Mormons Building Roads.
Yeah, sums it up. Mormons building houses. Why can't these guys that are building bridges, why can't they get in?
Why can't the Days of 47 parade lighten up on that one, Jim?
They are really one of the remnants of an old obtuse era, you know, and they've had their own little scandals. People have been stealing money and the church bails them out. And, you know, they got they should look at their own skirts before they
the Days of 47 is not supposed to be a political statement. It's not for social positions, all of that stuff. It is a celebration of heritage, all those other things, unless you're gay, I guess.
Yeah. Interesting.
See, I didn't.
Sorry.
Did I say that out loud?
I didn't mean.
You threw me that twist. You know, it was going one way, and then that curveball just went boom.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner,
goodness.
Joined by Senator Jim DeBacchus and Dan McCain. In our next segment, we'll talk about John Huntsman Jr. and the ambassadorship to Russia.
Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the non-Trump left.
And Natalie Gochner in the non-Trump political center. And this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Hey, we do a lot of talking on this show, and we'd love you to be part of the conversation. We want to hear what headlines caught your ear. Send them in. Write to KCPW. Go on their Facebook page at KCPW 88.3 or send us an email at comments@kcpw.org. Jim, I could save it for the gripe, but you've got issues with the new nominee for the Utah Transportation Commission, Larry Ellertson. This is a guy that I have served with on multiple, you know, community boards. This is a guy that always steps up and does public service. He's been a lot of places, but it's because he's always willing to serve. I think he's a great pick.
You know, we have a state that's set up with this old buddy. They've served on stuff. They're all there. Everybody knows them. They're on the Boy Scout committee. They're all. But you know what? Sometimes you got to go. I don't know the guy at all, but they send me his resume, and I will be
and you
voting
get a, you
on
get
his
a, do the confirmation.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah,
this is the money pot of all money pots in the state. This is the state transportation. These are the they're the ones that actually give out the $1 billion contracts. I mean, the governor keeps an eye on this. It's always a close personal friend. The previous guy is the guy who went out and was going to make millions of dollars as a commission on that $60 million Oakland port while he was on that commission. So this guy, he was the chairman of the Utah Transit Authority with all the financial problems and special interest problems they've had over the last generation. He was also president of the League of Cities and Towns. And what a mess that is with their own taxpayer slush funds and popping up and not keeping an eye on things. Over this, the friendship to the governor is fine, but we need somebody that is going to have a flashlight and make sure that they're not part of the old boy network and that they actually are going to make sure every dime of that special $1 billion we appropriated last session, plus a whole bunch of the federal money that's going to come rolling in, that it all goes fair and square and not to people's friends or hacks or political donors or whatever. I don't know that it would happen that way, but we got a bit of a track record here that he's going to have
to watch.
Look
Dan,
at.
Do you know Larry Ellertson personally or anything?
I've met him once.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't really have. I've been on the Boy Scout.
I just always known him as someone who is in public service for the right reason. So it'll be interesting as Jim gets to know him better if any
yeah,
of
Jim,
that changes.
Your vote? What's that?
Where's your voting on this one?
I'm going to vote no.
Unless
I'm
convinced.
Give
him a chance to hear him. Yeah,
yeah,
you got to hear this
mean,
guy.
I will, but I have questions. And, you know, the rest of the Senate, they don't like those kind of questions, the confirmation hearings. Now, this is a confirmation for somebody for the job, and I think those past things ought to be brought up. And there is this kind of, now, come on, don't make the person
showboat,
uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Don't be doing, yeah, don't
you have
showboat
to. You
or
have
whatever.
To.
But
if you've had leadership roles, but he'll probably have a good explanation for
this
you.
This is why Jim can't be in Senate leadership.
Hey, Dan.
He can't go along to get along, which is one thing I love about him.
Tell us, you're always got your ear close to the ground. What's going on with the John Huntsman Jr. Nominee for it to be ambassador to Russia? Has it been 2 months?
2 months. Yeah, it's been slow. But see, it's been caught up. I mean, all of the picks, the Reyes picked the same thing. And that's, you know, a couple of friends in the White House who are kind of giving me some back channel information. Mm-hmm. And really the deal is they've got these factions in the White House. And that's why you heard this week Trump is now starting to talk about reorganizing the entire White House after less than 200 days in, right? We're all
crazy.
Totally shocked.
Yeah, aren't
but
we, though?
That's why they're talking about this reorganization is because they set up a team. They brought in a lot of campaign people and all that stuff. And this is what happens to every public official.
Yeah.
They bring in their campaign people to run things, and then they realize, wait a minute, campaign people are strategic and, you know, boundary protecting and that kind of thing. And a White House doesn't function that way. You know that better than anybody.
Yeah.
And so I think Trump will make changes, which I think we'll see some of these nominations move forward. Huntsman's is really, really interesting because, you know, the whole Russia is a hot button issue. You know,
yeah.
The administration, the previous administration, whose Obama name I will not mention, swore for 7.5 years that the Russian government was not a problem and they were friendly and everybody was great to the country in Russia. And now all of a sudden, Russia is our greatest enemy.
Yeah, and Mitt Romney was
Romney was right.
During
and
the
all
campaign.
These things were. And now it's amazing to watch the 180 flip on this type of on Russia specifically by the Democrats, because they found this as a they're creating this Cold War type of environment, I think, right now.
What do the two of you make of the leaking of classified information by the president? If that's indeed
Orin's
what
right.
happened,
it's overblown.
It seems like a Washington Post story that was sort of
way
sensationalized.
Of yeah.
Jim, you're a Russia guy.
My goodness. Look.
He has deeper ties to Russia than Trump, maybe.
Yeah.
Look what happened. We have a human being spy in ISIS who said they're putting explosive in laptops, and it came from a third party, probably an Arab country. The president got that information, and it wasn't even shared within the United States government, never mind our allies, where we got that information, because it's easy to go back, and there's the mess with Syrian and Assad and with the Iranians, who were also their allies. So you have this incredibly hard to get human resource person who got us that information, and Trump has the foreign minister of Russia and this clown who is the ambassador, who's the chief spy for Russia and who's really good. He brings him in the White House and he's trying to brag about how much information we have, and he gives them information, specific information apparently, that will allow the Russians to put it as one more jigsaw piece in this big puzzle about where that spy may be. That's treasonous. Okay. It's not a little deal.
Now that we're done on that, but think about what the Washington Post did, right? They took a story that nobody was reporting on, and now they have dragged this person that is the spy or whatever out into the public, one, by taking this, quote, spy secrets, right? Mm-hmm. And they had one named source. The named source has already backtracked on their opinion on the issue. The other names that they – or the other sources in the story, they aren't named. So they're a department official or a person close to the situation. So all of those people have now nowhere to be seen. It's a Washington Post standing out there by themselves with this story.
It's just weak. It's just an amazing spectacle back there in Washington. I mean, I remember waking up the morning when we got in the last week the tweet that Trump put out where he basically said, "Comey better not, you know, say anything because I've got tapes." And you're sort of like,
"Hello,
what is he doing?" And then it's sort of like, "Oh, you have tapes? Okay, Congress is coming after him."
Wow. Just one more quick thing on that, and that is, what Trump did is so amateurish because his people all went out and says, "No, he didn't say anything. That's not what he said. Everything he said was blah, 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 blah." Then Trump starts tweeting, If I say it, it's no longer classified, because that's true. That's what the law is.
President gets to do that.
And he contradicted all of his people. My goodness. I think this is a big deal.
Yeah, interesting. Hey,
wait, you're telling me that Trump might not be the best secret keeper and government administrator?
If I were in the CIA,
totally news to everyone who voted for him. Also, by the way,
beep 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 alert.
So, kind of back to local politics, but the inside baseball crowd that might listen to this show would know that we were very close to having a special session, and it seems to have dissipated. Can either of you share the backstory? What was going on? What's going on here? What's the status of a special
Governor
session?
Governor always calls me to keep me in the loop, but I'll let you talk,
Jim's
Dan.
Jim's not the one to give the backstory here. Dan, anything you're comfortable sharing?
I think what you have is you've got the governor who, look, he's right. The legislature had an opportunity during the legislative session to pass a bill to deal with the replacement. And the legislature, because it wasn't urgent, because Chris Stewart wasn't.
We're talking about what here?
Oh, sorry. The special session for how to replace a congressperson when a congressperson steps down.
So Chaffetz goes, we don't really have a mechanism to replace him.
And so Chris Stewart was originally the one at the beginning of the session that was rumored to be, over the Air Force. And so in that process, they, Per Bramble and I got together, came up with a bill, put the bill through. It wasn't going anywhere in the House, so we changed it. And it passed the House. We're sending it back to the Senate the last night. But this is after Chris Stewart was not made, was not put over the Air Force. And as a result, you've got no urgency. Mm-hmm. Session ends. Chaffetz makes his announcement that he may leave early.
And it's looking like it's going to happen.
And now it's exigent.
So all the politicals start figuring out, how are we going to do this?
How do we do this? And the governor says, you know what? You didn't act when you had the opportunity, so now it's my turn.
Chaffetz quits tomorrow, please. we have no process at all?
The governor thinks he has a process. He gets to call a special election and can
do
the conditions of it.
Yeah, he can make something like...
He'll say, in a month, we're going to have a primary, and then we're going to have a general election in 2 months, and that's what happens. And he's saying, hey, I don't need a law.
And
I'm
if he does what he should do, he'll follow existing election law and let people get on via signature.
Yes, I understand that's... But we don't allow that for any of our other replacement elections.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not saying that's good or bad, because I passed the signature law,
Dan,
right?
Yeah.
Even though
Natalie
doesn't like me.
No, I do. I want to make the observation, though. You guys up on the Hill, you spend...
You think... No, wait. You are frustrated that I don't think that we need a signature process to replace
U.S. Congress. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would be. Yeah, because I think it's right to involve everyone.
And I understand that.
Yeah. But that aside... I watch you guys up on Capitol Hill, and it's just always so much huff and puff between the legislature and the governor. And I don't get why you guys can't work together better.
Well, Rodney King all inspired us with his words to can't we all get along.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's just a natural tension, right? And right now, I think, you know, if you look at the way things are being run, I think the legislature's running the state.
Does the legislature understand that it's important to have a chief executive officer instead of 104 people running the state?
Yeah, if we had one, wouldn't that be nice? But we got a dithering governor, and if the legislature didn't run things, who would? If Greg Hughes wasn't running the state, there would just be this
I want to just defend Governor Herbert by saying that the state seems to be doing pretty darn well.
Yeah.
But thank goodness, yeah, that things go on their own.
Things go on their own.
Who knows? Maybe
where's Jim going with this one?
Maybe the country will even make it.
I think, honestly, though, I think the governor does a very good job of trying to take things down a notch, at least. Mm-hmm. You know, there is this natural rub. And the governor is always the one who just says, well, you know, we'll see where things go. And the legislature tends to jump out there and kind of poke him a little bit.
The House.
That's the part that I would prefer change a little bit.
I mean, when I saw the talk that, you know, the legislature's thinking about changing the law so they can call themselves into special session.
Yeah.
I just sort of like, really? I only say that because I've just watched this, you know, reducing of executive branch power over several years now. And I just want to remind every legislator that aspires to be governor, when you're there, you're going to understand why it's important to have some...
I won't be governor, but I
why it's important to have some SWAT in the executive branch.
Yeah, I understand that. I just don't... I'll say this, and this is different from your boss than the present administration. When there are...
Governor Leavitt.
Governor Leavitt did a phenomenal job, I thought, of reaching out and working with the Speaker and with the Senate President back then and bringing them on board and making sure they were sharing the limelight, mm-hmm. sharing discussions.
Spent a lot of FaceTime with them.
Right? Mm-hmm. And it is not that way. Governor Herbert kind of says things and does things to try and put the legislature in a box. And then then he's frustrated when the legislature doesn't jump in that box.
One last comment. We have to go to gripes, but Jim, comment on this. The... I found it kind of interesting how the legislature feels to me like it's more of a full-time legislature. So you know, you go up on Capitol Hill now, you all have offices. That used to not be the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's legislators have a role now in diplomacy and international relations, and they claim control of the gold room and they claim control of the state plane. These are things that used to be the governor's. And I guess I wonder why we want a full-time legislature.
We don't. For goodness
sake,
I'd like to have a 3-day session every 5 years. I think that would be fine because they scare me more than the governor.
That's just enough time for us to pass new alcohol laws. That's what Jim wants.
Oh, let's go to gripes. Jim, do you have a good gripe for us?
Yes, I got a gripe. Jamie Stokes from Weber State. She didn't finish 5 seconds ahead of her nearest competitor in the 1500 meters this week. She won the Big Sky Championship, set a new record, and is looking like she's going to set a national record. So big congratulations to Jamie Stokes from Ogden and Weber. You're terrific, and you are as good an athlete as the state has, and so big kudos.
How does Jim know this stuff? Dan, you're great.
Yeah, I was just, you know, I was looking at a lot of the issues going on in the state, and one of the things that I think is not being talked about and not being mentioned is how well we are doing academically from our math and our science testing in the state of Utah. We want to complain about low funding and one thing or another, but we are not talking about how well from a state we are doing in our classrooms. And that's a tribute, candidly, to the educators and those kinds of things in the classroom who are doing a phenomenal job despite what they're being paid.
Good gripe. You know, it's interesting when we do these...
And wait a second. They all got 10% increases to their salary this next year, and, you know.
Yeah. It's so interesting when you do gripes how, you know, you react to each other. And I want to react to yours. I had a different gripe, Dan, but my gripe would be I totally agree with you. I mean, you look at fourth grade, eighth grade, all these things. We do amazingly well for how much we invest.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, though, that the achievement gap is a huge problem. And if you look at those scores for Hispanics, you look at them for low-income Utahns, the achievement gap is huge.
That's true.
And that's the price we'll pay in the future if we don't pay attention to that. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, been joined by Representative Dan McKay, Senator Jim DeBacchus. We're so happy to have the program produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.